We're looking at the black market this morning. From fake cigarettes to illicit T-shirts and DVDs, it's a never-ending battle in Wiltshire. It isn't a new issue, though. You listening right now might remember your family getting goods on the black market years ago. Mark Rudehouse is a black market historian and lecturer in modern history at York University. His book, Black Market Britain, 1939 to 1955, is published this month. Mark, when I think of the black market, sort of historically, we think of someone like Private Walker from Dad's Army selling dodgy goods. But it goes back even further than that, of course, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, what you're looking at in the 1940s is a sudden boom, but underground economies and dodgy dealing are as old as the economy.
So how far, I mean, your book takes it from 1939, but in your own research, how far back have you gone?
Well, I've been looking at to give a sense of the background to what happened in the 1940s, I did research on what happened between the wars and looking at how people on the breadline managed to supplement incomes or unemployment benefits. So the kind of things we'd think of today as benefit fraud, dealing in stolen goods, counterfeit goods, those kind of things.
So who traded in these illicit goods before 1940? Was it as organised as we've been hearing it is today?
I think there's a twofold answer to that. I think we perhaps think it's more organised than it really is today. And it was perhaps more organised than we think it was back in the 1920s and 1930s. You had a mixture of people who were involved. You had people who were really just stealing the odd bit of coal from freight yards to heat their houses because they couldn't afford to buy coal themselves, or shoplifting from wealthy shop owners, again, just put food on the table. But equally, you had more systematic attempts to defraud the benefits system, people stealing insurance stamps to put more stamps on their national insurance cards so they could get extended unemployment benefit, people stealing shop tokens, flying checks, all kinds of things like that were taking place. Plus the usual wheezes of particular trades. So, you know, there was always the odd and scrupulous butcher who would pass off condemned meat as fit for human consumption, someone who would give you short weight or adulterate things. But these were all, I say, relatively sort of small scale things, but the war changed it all.
Switching one meat for another meat would never happen today, would it?
Oh, absolutely. Not at all. Not at all.
Now, I'm thinking that rationing was going on during the Second World War of the early 40s, which would obviously put pressure on people. You mentioned people trying to heat their homes, trying to put food on the table. Was it seen as more respectable to deal in the black market back then, simply because needs must?
It was a mix. There was an element of If it was seen as something that you were doing to support yourself, support your family, or you were doing something that you didn't think there was a victim, then no one would be harmed by it, or no one else would lose out, then that was seen as relatively okay and would often be described as grey market rather than black market dealing. Mm. But of course, it's all in the eye of the beholder. So for some people, what was grey market for others might be black market. But the one thing where there would be agreement was that serious career criminals were involved, people would all consider that black as pitch.
Mm. Thinking locally, the railway running through Wiltshire, did that transport black market goods back then?
Yeah, one of the major problems facing the railways throughout the war was what they called euphemistically losses of goods in transit, which was actually pilfering and also outright theft by organised gangs. The Great Western Railway, obviously passing through Wiltshire, suffered quite a lot of this. There's an interesting account of someone who was based at Cirencester, obviously not in the county, but patrolling that area, who spent a lot of her time during the war chasing cartons and also sometimes entire freight loads of tobacco and cigarettes that went missing. Equally, you had black market goods passing through the county on their way to London. So during the mid part of the war, there was unbelievably a thriving trade in black market flowers from the Scilly Isles, which would go on trains up to Paddington.
That's amazing, isn't it? Well, I suppose wherever you can turn a buck, that's where people just look.
Exactly.
Where the money is. And you would think, given the war and the rationing, that it might drop off and people would go legit in the 50s. But that didn't happen.
No, I mean, what you find is you find a sort of a changing an emphasis of what's going on. One of the things that cartoonists of the time noticed, and Giles, one of my favorite cartoonists, did lots and lots of cartoons that appeared around that time, poking fun at spivs who supposedly were now unemployed because rationing had gone, but were reduced to selling Santa hats at Christmas and things like that. The kind of individuals who we all can remember bumping into in the shopping street just in the run-up to Christmas.
So it's interesting, isn't it, that it went on throughout the 50s, and here we are, 2013, and nothing. I know that the means to make money has changed, but the market still goes on.
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, I mean, about 2 years ago, someone was asking, well, it was more than that now, about 3 years ago, someone was asking me what my predictions would be for austerity. And I said, well, said what you'll see is a boom in the underground economy. You know, unfortunately, events have so far proved me right, because as people find themselves pushed to, you know, towards the breadline, or at least see their household incomes dramatically squeezed, then people want to maintain the standard of living. They're not looking at making a huge profit. They're just wanting to stay still, and to do that, it forces people to engage in all kinds of dodgy deals. I mean, most of my black marketeers in the 1940s were not serious organized crime. They weren't the Billy Hills or the Jack Spots of the London underworld. They weren't even Frankie Fraser, who was a kid running loose in the West End at this period. They were businessmen, struggling retailers who found themselves with falling profit margins and looking for a way to maintain a profit as their turnover fell. And they were all too it was all too easy to, as I say, with the butcher, adulterate a bit, you know, adulterate some mints, or to get hold of some coupons from a fly-by-night dealer who may or may not have been connected to a larger gang. And I think in many ways, you know, tobacconists today, news agents, are facing similar things. I mean, there's a lot of competition if you're a news agent today.
We were just talking to Kieran Sharp from the Federation Against Copyright Theft, and he was explaining that obviously the means to steal films has gone almost, you know, so hugely online. Not totally online, but it's just moving in that direction. I wonder whether you think the black market as a whole can ever be controlled now the internet is making the transition of goods so much more anonymous and simple. Do you think the genie's out of the bottle there?
Well, I mean, eBay has probably been the best invention since the small ad in the newspaper for the market in stolen goods. There's no doubt about that. And it is incredibly hard to police. And with a lot of these things, enforcement agencies, as always, are running behind. They have, you know, it's an arms race often, as people find new loopholes to exploit as other ones are closed. So it's a never-ending pursuit, and really, the main focus has got to be on demand, and trying to reduce demand.
Mark Roodhouse, lecturer in modern history at York University. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Author of Black Market Britain, 1939 to 1955. Fascinating to hear the history of the black market.